Okay, our recording is on. I'll just give the share's not starting yet. We have another minute. But just as way of introduction, I'll just review what we're doing. The name of the series, this is class number three in a series of four classes on the contradictions between Sefer Bamidbar and Sefer Dvarim. The goal is to understand Sefer Dvarim. And the second goal is to give a class each week on Parshat Shavua, because we're taking a topic, which is Parshat Shavua and Sefer Bamidbar this week, over this month, and we're relating it to a parallel topic in Sefer Devarim that appears to be contradictory, and we're trying to, again, resolve the questions and not to do it apologetically, but rather thematically. And our whole approach was, when you take into consideration the theme of each book and the purpose of why it's written, it'll make sense why we find differences. So I'm gonna share my screen in a second. Make sure I can share it. That's good. And I'll share with you my outline. Okay, that's good. And we'll start in a minute. That share looks good. Just doing a quick sound check. And we are okay. 2:30. Okay, so we're gonna begin. Thank you everyone for joining. Today's topic, I was looking for something in Parshat Korach that relates to Sefer Dvarim. And other than a quick mention, I think in chapter 10 or 11 in Sefer Dvarim, Moshe's speech about remember what happened to Korach, we really don't have the story of Korach in Parshat, in Sefer Dvarim. And there's really no reason why we need to have it when we take into consideration Sefer Dvarim. But what we do have, and I thought would be a most interesting topic for today, is what is the job of the Levites, of Shevet Levi, in Sefer Devarim compared to their job in Sefer Bamidbar? Now, what I want to begin with is a quick look in Parshat Korach in chapter 18, which is the conclusion of Parshat Korach, a section we rarely ever look at and get to because it's relatively boring compared to the story of Korach and his rebellion. And it's a law section which really doesn't belong in Sefer Vayikra. It really belongs it doesn't really belong in Sefer Bamidbar. It's a law section, like many in Sefer Bamidbar, that belong in Sefer Vayikra, but it's juxtaposed to a story in Sefer Bamidbar for thematic reasons. I'll just give a quick example as people are signing in. There's a phenomena in Sefer Bamidbar, which is primarily a narrative. It's a story of Am Yisrael leaving Har Sinai, getting ready to leave Har Sinai and conquer the land in the second year. Up until the first 10 chapters, up until Vayhi Ben Saharon. From chapter 11 to 25 is what goes wrong and who doesn't make it and why they don't make it. Basically, how the first generation dies and why they die. And how certain people, even in the second generation, don't make it. And with an underlying theme of leadership and why Moshe and Aaron don't lead the people in. And then from chapter 26 to the end is the new generation getting ready to go in. That would be a standalone narrative. And any law which God wanted to give Am Yisrael should have been in a different book, because that's not the topic of Sefer Bamidbar. But we do find we have many laws that were given most likely at Har Sinai, sometime before they leave Har Sinai. They have to do with the Mishkan. And four or five times in Sefer Bamidbar, we insert these laws because of the thematic connection to the ongoing story. Last week we had, after the story of the spies, we had the laws about Nesachim, about when you bring an animal sacrifice, you bring with it flour and wine, which you can't do in the desert, you can only do in the land of Israel. And therefore, it's a law section that belongs in Sefer Vayikra that's juxtaposed to the story of the spies. Similarly, the laws of Tzitzit, which is like the baking of the Kohen Gadol, Tzitzit with the Ptil Tchelet. But because the word Lotaturu is both in Parshat Tzitzit and in the story of the spies, we juxtapose it to the story in Sefer Bamidbar. In a similar manner, because the story of Korach is a rebellion by many members of Shevet Levi, not only Shevet Levi, also Shevet Reuven, but Shevet Levi is very prominent, especially Korach himself is from Levi, and the rebelling against the Kohanim, or the exclusivity of the Kohanim. Therefore, the Parsha ends with the law section that we'll see in a minute belonged earlier, but it talks about the compensation of what Shevet Levi and the Kohanim received for their jobs. So let's begin with that very quickly. And then I'll get to the interesting part. Again, the first 5-10 minutes will be a bit of a stall to explain the question. The fun stuff we'll do in about 2-3 minutes. So let me share my screen with the introduction. First, we're going to define the problem. What's our problem? In Sefer Bamidbar, we're going to find a very clear distinction between the Kohen and the Levi. The Kohen is the main job. He's bringing the Korbanot and working in the Mikdash. And Shevet Levi is there to assist them. We're going to bring examples from Parshat Shavuot in chapter 18. But in Sefer Dvarim, we're going to find it seems that the Kohanim and Levim are one big group, that they do everything together. We'll take a look at that and try to understand why. And what I want to discuss today, basically, is why is the description of the jobs and the responsibility of Shevet Levi different in Sefer Dvarim than it is in Sefer Bamidbar? So let's just take a look in, we'll share now. Wait, I didn't share my screen, did I? Sorry about that. Sharing my screen. I thought I was sharing my screen, but I'm not. Something happened to my screen here. You guys, I don't see. One second. Oh, here we go. Okay. Share screen. My mistake. I had the wrong button on. Do you see my screen or not? You don't see my screen, do you? Now you see my screen. Sorry about that. And I'm going to say this. Yeah. The introduction is defining the problem, distinction between Kohen and Levi. We're going to look in Sefer Bamidbar, chapter 18. I'm going to send this out. I thought I could send this file, but I can't send it to the group. I'm not sure why. But it'll be on the website together with the share if you want to review it later on. So again, in Sefer Bamidbar, there's a big difference between the Kohanim and Levim. In Sefer Dvarim, they seem to be together. We'll just prove that quickly. Look in this week's Parsha now. In chapter 18, here we go. Chapter 18 in Sefer Dvarim. God tells Aaron after the whole incident, or this is recorded after the incident of Korach, etc. He tells you're in charge of the Mikdash. And then in Pasuk Bet, God tells him, "V'gam etachecha matel Levi shevet avicha hakrev itach v'yalevu alecha v'yishartucha." The tribe of your brethren, the tribe of Levi, bring them close to you, and they're going to work together with you. They'll accompany you, together with you and your children in the Ohel Moed, and they're going to help you take care of guarding the Ohel Moed. But there's something only you people do. You take care of the Klei Kodesh, and they take care of the overall Mishmeret Ohel Moed. And we don't have time to go into it, but we saw earlier, and we'll see it again later, that this topic of Shevet Levi being divided and having a special topic to guard the Ohel Moed didn't happen after the story of Korach. It had to have happened before we left Har Sinai for a very simple reason. If you go back to the end of chapter 1, the very end of chapter 1, take a quick look. After we counted all the tribes, God tells Moshe in verse 48, God tells Moshe, "Achet matel Levi lo tifkod, v'torsham lo tisa b'toch b'nei Israel." Don't count them among the people of Israel who are about to go to war. Instead, give them a different job. They're in charge of the Mishkan and the Kelim. Okay? So therefore, the job of the Levim, the help in the Mishkan, was already given to them before we left Har Sinai. Because remember, the first chapter of Sefer Bamidbar is the beginning of the second month. And if you jump ahead to chapter 8, Parsha Balotcha, already on the day of Hakamat HaMishkan, God told Moshe Rabbeinu, take the Levim and do this whole ceremony with them and take and transfer their responsibility from the firstborn, and now they're going to work in the Mishkan. So from the time the Mishkan was set up and built, Shevet Levi already had a special job guarding the Mishkan. So it can't be that the laws of Shevet Levi helping Aaron and their compensation was only an afterthought after the story of Korach. Therefore, my claim is that the laws of Shevet Levi are recorded at the end of Parshat Korach, not because they were given at that time, only because of the thematic connection to the topic of Korach's rebellion. Why that's thematically important, we'll see as this year progresses. Now we're going to start with the real problem. We're going to go to Sefer Dvarim. In Sefer Dvarim, we often find the Kohanim and Levim mentioned almost in the same breath. We're going to take a look in Dvarim. And I'll just start with chapter 17, because it's a classic one. It's in the first Aliyah of Parshat Shoftim. We're going to take a quick look at chapter 17 in Sefer Dvarim. There we go. Sefer Dvarim, chapter 17. Ki Kipalei bimcha davar lamishpat, should there be a, in verse 8, should it be a question that the local authorities aren't able to answer, no matter what the topic is, then we're told if the local Beit Din, if the local judges can't answer the question, then you go to the Beit HaMikdash in Yerushalayim. Uvanta el ha-kohanim ha-levim, el ha-shafet asher b'yamim ha-him. When you come to the Yerushalayim, to the Beit HaMikdash, and you want the final authority, if you want to go to the Supreme Court, who do you go to? You go to the Kohanim HaLevim. Over and over again in Sefer Devarim, the Kohanim are called the Kohanim HaLevim. Now, is it only the Kohanim who are also from Sefer Levi? Is it the, are the Levim called Kohanim? It's a bit unclear as you read the book. If you look, for example, in chapter 21, in the story of an Egla Rufa, if there's a homicide that takes place, we don't know who did it. So in the middle of the story, the elders of the community have to come and do a special ceremony. But in the middle of the ceremony, we're told, V'nikshu ha-kohanim b'nei Levi. Who comes into the ceremony? The Kohanim, who are from B'nai Levi. Because God chose them to serve him and to bless in his name. And they're in charge of all disputes. Like, they're the ultimate legal authority. And they go together because this is a trial. And therefore, they're coming in the middle of this ceremony where we have to take responsibility for an unsolved homicide. Again, that's only two of many examples throughout Sefer Devarim where the Kohanim and Levim pretty much are grouped together. We'll see more examples as we go on. So what I want to do today in the shir is try to understand what's the reason why the Levim are presented differently in Sefer Bamidbar than Sefer Devarim. Or the other way around. Why Sefer Devarim? Why are they different than Devarim? We're all familiar with there's the Kohanim and Aaron. Remember the story in Parsha Korach, where Korach is from Shevet Levi, and he says, Moshe, you and Aaron have taken too much for yourself, Rav Lechem. How come only you get to bring Korbanot? And they're arguing about how come only Kohanim bring Korbanot, but it's quite clear that the Kohanim can do a lot more than the Levim. We get to Sefer Devarim, it seems like they're pretty much together. Now, to understand everything, I want to begin with the concept of Bechor, of the firstborn, and there's a very simple reason for that. The firstborn is a topic, Bechorah is a topic that begins in Sefer Breshit, and we find it all through Sefer Shemot. I'm going to take off the, unshare my screen for a minute. I want to talk for a minute about the concept of being firstborn, and there's a topic which is rather popular today as well, for through all generations, especially when do with leadership and politics. Is an appointed, a conferred position of leadership, is it responsibility or privilege? When I'm in a position of leadership, does that mean I have more privileges than other people, or do I have more responsibility? And when someone is chosen for national leadership, is the goal of that leadership because that person now gets more privileges, or is the main reason for choosing and making one group special, it's because of the responsibility, and those privileges are part of that responsibility? And that's a big difference. For example, it's a big topic because one of the biggest topics ever since Sefer Bereshit is the fact that God chooses a nation to serve him. The nation of Israel is chosen from all the 70 nations. God picks one nation and confers upon them a special status to his people. Is that being chosen, is that idea of being chosen, is that God likes us better than everyone else and we have more privileges and being Jewish means we're more privileged than any other nation? And being Jewish means we have to thank God for that those extra privileges? Or is being chosen to be God's people a responsibility? And any privilege we may have as God's people is because of our responsibility. And that's a big question. How do we view our Judaism? As are we thanking God because he made us better than other people? Or are we recognizing that God chose us for a reason and we have more responsibility, and therefore we're more responsible for our behavior? And the meaning of our Judaism is the responsibility that we have towards other nations and towards our behavior and towards our God, and not just, oh, we get more reward than other people. I want to bring one story from Sefer Bereshit, which is classic. You might remember in Sefer Bereshit that Yaakov and Esav were fighting over the Bechorah. And when you read the story the first time, it looks like Yaakov is ripping Esav. Esav's about to die, and Yaakov pulls a fast one on him and gets Esav to sell his right to the firstborn for a bowl of soup. When you read the story carefully, though, and you follow the Parshanim as well, Rabbana, I'm pretty sure, highlights this, They're not fighting over a financial, it's not a financial deal. Who's going to inherit daddy's bank account? Even though some person go in that direction, that Esav thinks, oh, my father's inheritance won't be worth anything, or I'm going to die before he does, so who cares? But rather, Yaakov wants the responsibility of leading the family and leading the Jewish people. Esav is not interested in that responsibility. And author Sefer Bereshit, the Bechora, has to do with the responsibility of leading the family and not what you receive. And if the Bechor is going to receive a double portion, it's not because he's better, but the Bechor, the firstborn, receives a double portion because he has the responsibility of keeping the family going after the father passes on. When Yaakov wants the Bechora, he sees himself as more fit for family leadership than Esav, because he understands better why God chose his forefathers, why God chose Avram and Yitzhak to start the nation. And that may be the underlying reason why God picks up Yaakov over Esav, and only Yaakov becomes the Jewish people. And later when Yehuda receives the Bechorah, even though he's not born first, Yehuda takes the Bechorah later on in Jewish history because of his behavior. Or in Yosef, certain ways, becomes the Bechor, because he receives the double portion. But all through Sefer Bereshit, the Bechor, the firstborn, is not the child who's born first. Rather, the firstborn is the child who takes on leadership of the family. Why do we bring this all up? If I go to Sefer Shmot, there's a very important pasuk in the beginning of the story of the Exodus, in chapter 4. After the whole burning bush incident, Moshe goes back to his father-in-law, tells him, it's time, I have to go back to my people. And God tells Moshe, on your way back to Egypt, I have a job for you. What does God tell, in chapter 4 in Sefer Shmot, God tells Moshe, verse 21, Moshe, on your way to Egypt, look at all the miracles I showed you. And you have a job, I'm sending you to Pharaoh to tell him to send my people out. What is Moshe supposed to tell Pharaoh in his opening line? The Amartel Paro, one general line, Ko Amar Hashem, Bini Bechori Yisrael. God tells Moshe, your opening line in your interaction with Pharaoh, you're coming on behalf of God and on behalf of the Jewish people. You're going to tell Pharaoh that you want to take God's people out of Egypt, but how does he refer to God's people? Bini Bechori Yisrael. When God refers to his people as his firstborn son, that implies that God has many children. And the 70 nations, figuratively speaking, is all civilization, and God views each nation, each ethnic identity, each national identity, each country, as a people like his child. From all those children, God picks one child who definitely is not born first. We're one of the last nations on the international scene, but he refers to the Jewish nation as his firstborn son because he's giving them the responsibility of international leadership. Not necessarily political leadership, but hopefully religious leadership, or being God's model nation, that will bring a concept of godliness to other nations. And therefore, the idea of Bechorah is key, because for the same reason that God's going to choose a people among the 70 nations, he's going to pick one tribe within the 12 tribes of that nation. I want to emphasize that point because it's critical, in my opinion. What are the biggest themes in Chumash? In fact, I think the biggest theme is that God creates, not just it's God of all creation, God creates civilization and gives man the ability to be in charge of civilization. The nature of man that God created is that he forms into groups, into political entities, and nations are formed. It starts with the story of Migdal Babel, of the Tower of Babel. And among the nations that happen naturally, humankind divides into many nations, and that becomes civilization. Sometimes they work together, sometimes they fight. But civilization develops through multiple nations. God's going to choose one nation and give them a job to do, give them a responsibility of representing God. And for the same reason that God picks one nation among the 70 to serve him, within that nation, there's going to be 12 tribes. And one of those tribes, the tribe of Levi, is going to be chosen from those 12 tribes to serve God for the sake of the other 11 tribes that they're chosen from. And then within Shevet Levi, we'll see God will pick one family of Shevet Levi, the Kohanim, to sort of lead the tribe of Levi. And among the Kohanim, God will pick the Kohen Gadol going to be chosen. So there's almost this pecking order where every single group needs within that group one person or one group to be chosen with more responsibility towards serving God. But the purpose of that separation of that one group is in order to be the sort of liaison between God and that group. I want to go back to, as long as we're in Sefer Shemot, we have the same idea at Mount Sinai. And this would be key to understanding the job of Shevet Levi. After 6-7 weeks of being in the coming out of Egypt and going through all these experiences in the desert, God brings us to Har Sinai and makes a proposition and tells Moshe, go tell the people. This is right before the Ten Commandments. And now, are you willing to obey me? In Shemot Yishmu B'Koli, again, chapter 19 in Shemot, verses 5 and 6. And will you keep my covenant? And you'll be my special nation. And then, Batem Tiuli, if you accept this proposal to be my people, you'll be for me a Mamlechet Kohanim V'Goy Kadosh. If you accept the responsibility and you enter this covenant to be my people, that will make you a sovereign nation representing God. A nation, a Goy Kadosh means a nation separated among the other nations in the service of God. And you'll be a sovereign nation. A Kohen is anyone in the service of a higher authority, like a minister. Therefore, you're going to be a priestly nation in the service of God from all the other nations. Even though God is a God of all the people, of all the land, the way Ebenezer explains there. That God is a God of all nations. God's picking one nation to be a skula, for the purpose of representing him, being a Kohen for the other nations. So just like within the Jewish people, they're Kohanim. So too, the Jewish people serve as a Kohen for the other nations. Within the Jewish people, there's 12 tribes. One tribe is separated to be liaison with God. And then within the tribe of Levi, we'll see one tribe will be separated, the Kohanim, to do a little extra service in the Mishkan. Now, that brings us to a bigger topic about, we're going to see that the main job of the Kohanim, later the Levim, will be to guard the Mishkan. But what's the purpose of the Mishkan? If I'm going back to that mega theme, that we're chosen to serve God, the main way we serve God is not by feeding God. God didn't take us out of Egypt so we'd have a nation to feed him korbanot. Yirmiyahu says that explicitly in chapter 7, but it should be obvious. Like in any religion, when you serve your God, you bring something symbolic to remember your connection to God. You serve a God. Every God has a temple, and you offer sacrifices. But when you offer the sacrifice, you're coming to remember your relationship with God. The main job you have as God's people is your behavior, is your national behavior, how you behave as a nation. That's the key theme of Parshat Mishpatim. That's the key theme of the Ten Commandments. That's the key theme of Kedoshim Tiyu in Sefer Vayikra. That's the key theme we'll see in Sefer Tvarim. The laws of how we behave is the way we serve God. The main way we serve God is in our day-to-day behavior. We come to the Mikdash and to the temple to remember what our behavior is about. Therefore, what becomes the symbol of our God? The symbol of our God is called the Aron. Remember, it's called Aron Brit Hashem or Aron HaBrit or Luchot HaEdut. It's our reminder, our testimony of our covenant that we're God's people. And instead of having a physical symbol of our God, the symbol of our God is simply our contract and the laws in which we serve him. Therefore, the Aron Brit, the Aron, which is referred to as God, all through Chumash, or representing God, what's inside of it, the Luchot HaBrit, is a covenant to be God's people. Next to it will be the Torah. Excuse me. And remember, the Torah, that guide, comes together with the Luchot. Therefore, when we come to the Mishkan, the Ramban explains this beautifully in the beginning of Parshat Truma, the whole purpose of a visit to the Mishkan is to remember the events of Har Sinai and your commitment to be God's people forever. And when you come either to the Mikdash or later to a Beit Knesset, the goal is to remember not that you're chosen, but why you're chosen. And the guide for the way you serve God is the Torah that you're keeping. That's why a Torah means an instruction booklet. Therefore, we'll see in a minute, the tribe of Shevet Levi is going to be chosen, we'll see, to carry the Aron Brit Hashem. In light of that, I want to give a bit of a different explanation of what that means. So let's take a quick, let's share now. I want to go now to Sefer Dvarim. Again, in Sefer Bamidbar, the job of the Kohanim is to bring the Korbanot, and the job of the Levim is to guard the Mishkan, so a non-Kohen person, so not anyone can barge into the Mikdash. They have to guard the Mikdash to make sure that it's entered properly.
But we'll see in Sefer Devarim, their job of national leadership is very different. So let's go now to Sefer Devarim. I'll go back and share my screen again. Let me go to my outline and see what we've done so far. We had an introduction to finding the problem, difference between a Kohen and Levi. We talked about sources in Bamidbar where they're quite separate. But later we'll talk about Birkat Kohanim, which is also in Sefer Bamidbar. Hopefully we'll give a reason for it soon. And Sefer Devarim, where they're sort of grouped together. Then we talk about the concept of Bechor in light of the theme of Sefer Bereshit, B'ni Bechor Yisrael, the idea of a Kedushat of a Mamlechet Kohanim in Har Sinai and Shemot. And then I should mention also in Sefer Shemot, when we came out of Egypt, what does God do? Everyone knows this, it's in your tefillin. It's God says, Kaddish li kol b'chor, every firstborn of the Jewish people is dedicated to God. When we left out of Egypt, every firstborn should have been killed in the 10th plague. God saved them in order to work for him. Therefore, the generation that left Egypt, those firstborn are now dedicated to God because he saved their lives. And then we transfer the duty of the firstborn to an entire tribe, to Shevet Levi, later in Sefer Bamidbar. Now, we talked about the concept of privilege and responsibility. We'll get to Sefer Bamidbar, chapter 16. We talked about that beforehand. But it's their responsibility to guard the Mishkan. And because of that responsibility, they're given compensation. We'll talk about their compensation soon. Now we're going to go to Sefer Devarim, indeed. And we're going to go to the first mention of Shevet Levi in chapter 10. I'll just read the Hebrew from here. It's almost a footnote to the story of the golden calf. But Moshe remembers giving over in his speech in Sefer Devarim, telling the people why it's been 40 years. We talked about this many times in our first two shiurim. Moshe is explaining to the people in his speech why it's been 40 years since we first received these laws. And the laws in Sefer Devarim are how to be a nation in the service of God. And then he talks about how bad they've been and gives them Musar, a lot of rebuke throughout the speech. He gives the story of Chet HaEgel, how you should have been wiped out, but God, Moshe prayed for you and saved you, and God gave you another chance. And then we're told at the time of Har Sinai, at that time, God separated Shevet Levi and were given three different jobs. Again, chapter 10, verse 8 and 9. At that time, the time of Mamad Har Sinai or Chet HaEgel, God separated Shevet Levi, number one, to carry the Aron Brit Hashem, to carry the Ark of God's covenant. Lamod ifnei Hashem l'sharto, to stand in front of God to serve him. U'levarech bishmo. This sounds like, and this is what seems to be a contradiction, it looks like Shevet Levi's job is to carry the Aron, but that dafka fits, because they carry the Aron, that's Parshat, we said that in Parshat Naso. To stand in front of God to serve him, we have to see what that means. And to bless in his name, that sounds like a job for Kohanim. So most Parshim say this is Levi and that's for Kohanim. You can make distinctions, but remember, it's all part of the job of Shevet Levi. What I want to claim is the responsibility of carrying the Aron Brit Hashem. If I understand the Aron Brit Hashem in Sefer Devarim is the symbol of our connection to God, but the biggest thing in Sefer Devarim is going to be HaMakom HaShiv HaShem LaShakein Shmo Sham, having a central place to serve God, which later becomes Yerushalayim. Once Yerushalayim is chosen, and once the Mishkan or the Beit HaMikdash is set up in a permanent site, I don't need to carry the Aron anymore. I don't need to separate an entire tribe for eternity to carry the Aron Brit Hashem, which is a one-time job. Therefore, it doesn't make sense to me that God has to separate Shevet Levi for all generations to carry the Aron Brit Hashem for a year or two in the desert. Rather, I understand that to carry the Aron Brit Hashem, l'set, is a key word in Sefer Bamidbar as well. Like Moshe says, it was like the burden of leadership, Moshe calls l'set et ha'amazet, kashur yisat omen et ha'onek. To carry responsibility, remember Moshe says, lo ochal nochi levadi l'set et ha'amazet, I can't carry this nation myself. To carry responsibility, what's the job of Shevet Levi? They're going to carry the Aron Brit Hashem in a figurative sense. It's their job to keep the Aron going. What's that mean? If we're going to be a nation chosen forever to be God's people, I'm going to highlight this because I think this is the key thematic point of Shevet Levi. And remember, Sefer Devarim laws for a nation, they're going to keep us as God's people forever. I want to ensure that we are God's people forever. to be that nation forever, I need one central place of authority and worship that was Hamakom HaShivchar Hashem in chapter 12. But I'm also going to need to make sure that Torah is taught for all generations. I need to make sure that there's one authority of teaching Torah. I need to know that there's a hierarchy in interpreting the Torah, teaching it, making sure it's copied properly and interpreted properly. Therefore, God is going to designate an entire tribe to be the core, that guild, that's going to keep the tradition of Torah study going forever. Figuratively speaking, it's called carrying the Aron Brit Hashem. We're going to see Psukim and Sefer Dvarim that's going to support what I'm saying. In other words, God separates Shevi Levi not to physically carry the Aron, but to carry the responsibility of what's in the Aron, which is our covenant to be God's people. And therefore, I'm making a big deal about the brit we make at Har Sinai to be God's people forever, the Torah being given, the brit with God and the Ten Commandments and the laws that come with the Ten Commandments, and together with the Mishkan that reminds us of the events of Har Sinai. And remember, if I follow the Ramban in Parshat Truma in chapter 25 in the beginning, Am Yisrael never leaves Har Sinai, we take Har Sinai with us. And the Mishkan becomes an eternal reminder of the events of Har Sinai. In that sense, we always have now Shevet Levi, it's your job going to be to teach Torah. We'll see this in Sefer Devarim very soon. Not only do they carry the Aron, they have to stand to serve God. We're going to see in Sefer Devarim the way the Kohanim serve God is not only by bringing Korbanot, but primarily by being the judges and teachers. Because to be God's nation forever, I need teachers who are going to teach the Torah. I need judges, not just educators. I also need a magistrate. I need people to become shoftim, because we need shoftim in every gates of our cities. And what it means to bless in God's name, we'll talk about hopefully by the end of this year. In what way does God bring blessing to the people and how that's represented by Birkat Kohanim. Therefore, if I want to be God's people forever, I need to make sure I always have people who their lives are dedicated to the service of God. Because of that, if I want to make sure that they're always working, and I have an entire tribe that's going to keep the Torah going, teach Torah, study Torah, interpret the Torah, and be judges, and therefore I'm going to scatter them throughout all the tribes, therefore, Pasuk 9, Pasuk 10, Alkei lo ye lelevi chelek v'nachalei machav, therefore Levi won't have a portion with his brethren, Hashemu nachoto. We saw that also in Sefer Bamidbar, that because of their responsibility to work in the Mishkan, they don't get nachala because they can't be farmers. They're not going to make a living by farming. Instead, they're going to get 10% of our income. And that's the end of chapter 18 in Sefer Bamidbar, that they get 10% maser. Every farmer has to give 10% of his produce in order to support these teachers and educators. And in that way, I'm going to guarantee that I have people teaching Torah and people supporting them. And that'll explain the laws of Masorot, which is also another theme in Sefer Dvarim, as well as in Bamidbar. So we talked about what it means to carry the Arok and the connection to Matan Torah. Now, the question comes up, when did Shevet Levi get that job? Most Parshim explain, most commentators say, it's after the sin of Chet HaEgel. Because in Chet HaEgel, who joins Moshe Rabbeinu in punishing the perpetrators? They were told Shevet Levi comes and joins them. The question is after what happened in Chet HaEgel, was that an afterthought that only then we needed Shevet Levi? Or are we adding another responsibility, something that was there before? I want to go back to what we talked about many times. My claim was that the core laws of Sefer Dvarim, all the laws that we find in Dvarim, not the rebuke that Moshe gives, but the core laws, and the system becoming God's people forever, was a set of laws that Moshe received on the first 40 days on Har Sinai that come together with the Ten Commandments. My claim is, even before the sin of Chet HaEgel, Shevet Levi was already in this position of national leadership as far as being the educators and teachers of the people. That was part of God's original plan. Thematically, I first gave that job to the firstborn coming out of Egypt to highlight that responsibility, and then I transferred that responsibility to Shevet Levi. But the idea of having Shevet Levi, I don't think is an afterthought only because of Chet HaEgel. I think if I follow my claim that Moshe Rabbeinu said in chapter 5 in Sefer Dvarim, that all the laws he's teaching in Sefer Dvarim, not the rebuke, but the laws, are laws he received that come with the Ten Commandments, it makes sense that together with the Ten Commandments and the laws of how to establish God's people in the land, come a set of laws to make sure that the Jewish people remain educated and have teachers and judges and educators forever. And therefore, we're going to see now, every time we talk about the Kohanim and Levim in Sefer Dvarim, it won't be a job that relates to sacrifice in the Mikdash, but rather it's a job of national leadership and teaching Torah. I want to work backwards from the end of the book. Let's go now to Sefer Dvarim, the famous blessings of Moshe Rabbeinu at the end of the book. That's going to be in chapter 33, Bezot HaBracha. We remember this from Simchat Torah. It's one of the aliyahs we read over and over again. So this is the blessing that Moshe gave all the tribes. Begin with Torah Sivalenu Moshe. Reuven, what's he say, Levi? Levi Amar Tumech Lishchasidecha. And then we talk to Levi as follows. In verse 10, chapter 33, verse 10. Yoru Mishpatecha Yaakov. What is the blessing, or basically the responsibility of Sheva Levi? It's your job to teach God's laws, right, to Yaakov, to the nation, to Torah Tchal Yisrael. It's called Tikbolet, it's parallelism, saying the same thing in a poetic way. It's a job of Shevet Levi to teach your laws to the people. Torah. That's referring already to the Korbanot. But the main job, and then God will bless that army or that core of people that are serving him, and he'll help them defeat their enemies thanks to that Torah study and instruction. So again, here we see that Moshe's blessing is, it's the job of Shevet Levi to teach Torah to the Jewish people. Where else do we see this? If I go back to what we saw before in chapter 21, that's a case of, again, a homicide, an unsolved homicide, and the elders of the closest community have to take responsibility, because even though they didn't kill the person, they have to take responsibility as national leaders, as community leaders, of how a homicide like that could happen without anyone finding out about it. And therefore they do this, the ritual called Egla Rufa. In the middle of this ceremony, who has to come and sort of bless the people, pray on behalf of the people? The Nikshua Koni B'nai Levi. Why do B'nai Levi have to come? Because what's their job as national leaders? Kivam Bachar Hashem L'Shorto. God chose this tribe, these Koni from B'nai Levi, to serve him and to bless in his name. And here, Vapiyam Yakol Ri B'chol Naga. They're the ultimate authority in any quarrel or any fight, any law that comes up. And again, this is a case of jurisprudence, of a case where there's an unsolved murder. They're in charge of the judicial system. Therefore, they have to be involved in this procedure of or this ritual of Egla Rufa. Without going into the details, in the end, they pray that God atone his people for the sin, for the innocent blood that was spilled. Now, back to Sefer Dvarim. I'm going to go most important to chapter 31. And here we see Moshe Rabbeinu, who is the leader of the people, both the political leader and also the teacher. Moshe, at the end of his life, he gives over his leadership in different directions. Yeshua is going to take over political leadership and military leadership. But Shevet Levi is going to take over educational leadership. Listen carefully. Vayikra Moshe to Yeshua, again, chapter 31, verse 7, and tells the people, in front of all the people, be strong, because you're going to lead the people. Ki ata tavo ata'am el arta asher nishba avotam, and you're going to help them settle it, and God will go help with you. Then Pasuk Tet, verse 9, that's Moshe's political leadership. How about his educational leadership? Vayikto Moshe ta Torah hazot, Moshe writes down the Torah. But now the Kohanim B'nai Levi, he gives the Torah to the Kohanim B'nai Levi, Hanosim et Aron Brit Hashem. Like we saw before, the job of Shevet Levi is to carry the Aron Brit Hashem and to the elders. And he commands them and follows that every 7 years, at the end of the Shemitah cycle, when Israel comes together, the mitzvah of Hakel, we gather the nation together and we repeat Mamad Har Sinai. Everyone knows that Hakel, every 7 years, at the end of the Shemitah cycle, we're going to relive the events of Mamad Har Sinai. We're going to sort of reenact the Torah being given. And therefore, the Levim are going to read the Torah at Hakel. And everyone who wasn't at Mamad Har Sinai, the next generation growing up, people who didn't know are going to come to learn to fear God and to keep his laws. And that'll be the job of Shevet Levi. And again, in chapter, later on in chapter 31, when Moshe writes, before Shirat Hazinu, what are we told? In he commands Yeshua, I'm sorry, After Moshe writes down Pasach Chavdalat, Baiki Chalot Moshe, Dichtov Divrei HaTorah Zot, El Sefer HaTumam, Baitzav Moshe Talavim, Nosei Aron Brit Hashem Lemor. Here again we see, what's the job of Shevet Levi? They're carrying the Aron Brit Hashem. Therefore, when Moshe finishes writing the Torah, he gives over that responsibility of carrying the Torah for all generations to Shevet Levi. He tells him, L'kuach et Sefer HaTorah Zeh, take the Sefer Torah, which is our guidebook for our behavior, and put it next to the Aron Brit Hashem, and that'll be their warning or your testimony. Because then he goes on about how you have to lead the people and warn them to make sure they follow the laws. If they don't follow the laws, how terrible punishment they might have. And therefore, it's your job to carry the Aron Brit Hashem and lead the people in leading. I want to bring one more example of what it means to serve God. If I go back to chapter 19, let me go back to my outline here for a minute. I want to show you that serving God in Sefer Devarim is not bringing korbanot, but rather it's going to be, it'll relate to teaching. Take a look in their judges here. In chapter 19, verses 16 to 17. We'll take a quick look there. I'm sorry, wrong share. Again, if you have a chumash with you, look in chapter 19 in Sefer Devarim. Sefer Devarim, chapter 19. I'm trying to show you all through Devarim, we never describe the Kohanim and Levim as officiants in the temple. Not that they didn't do that. That's the topic of Sefer Vayikra, about how to use a Mishkan, and the laws of Vayikra that we find in Sefer Bamidbar. But the main law of Sefer of Shevet Levi, to be, which are their national function as a nation, as a tribe that's in charge of education, we see over and over again in Sefer Devarim. So again, there's a law about Edim. Okay, so we'll look in verse 16. Again, chapter 19, verse 16. Kilkum eid chamas beish lanot basara. Let's say there's a phony witness coming and giving witness against another person. And it comes to court. Who are we going to believe? So there's a conflict between two people. Vamdu shnei anashim asher lehem ariv. Remember we saw before that the Kohanim and Levim, they're in charge of all the quarrels. So the two people stand in front who have this riv. Stand, listen carefully. Pasuk Gitzayin is key. These two men who are having a quarrel about who's right and who's wrong, they have to stand in front of God. What does it mean to stand in front of God? It means you're standing for judgment in front of God. And then Chumash explains, what does it mean in front of God? Lifnei ha-kohanim v'ha-shoftim asher yu b'yamim ahim. The job of the shoftim, the job of the judges, and now we'll see a minute the kohanim, their job is to represent God, to make sure the justice is done. Then, the shoftim have to do a good, what's called risha. They have to check the case, listen to the witnesses, and make a decision. If you remember back in Parsha Mishpatim, the name of the judges is called Elohim. Remember, Ki Mishpat Elohimu. When justice is carried out, human beings are acting on behalf of God, making sure the justice is done. And therefore, anyone can be a judge, but to be a judge, you have to be educated. You have to know the law, especially Jewish law. And even though everyone can be a judge, it only makes sense that when there's an entire tribe, Kohanim and Levim, who are dedicated to Torah study and keeping the Torah going, and because they have no nachala and they're scattered among the 12 tribes, every tribe has to give a certain area in certain cities for Levim. That topic comes up in Parshat Maaseh. What cities they're given and how they're just divided up among the different tribes. We want to make sure that there's educators and teachers and judges in every single area of the country, within every shevet. Therefore, it makes sense that the default example of a shofet would be a Kohen or a Levi. Now, a side point, which I think is important, why are they called Kohanim and Levim throughout Sefer Devarim? Shevet Levi is set aside to teach Torah. Any person who's doing their job in Hebrew, nowadays in modern Hebrew as well, it's called a mechahen. There's what's called Rosh Memshala mechahen. There's Rosh Memshala who is now in office, or a Sar mechahen. You can have a person who is a minister. When he's doing his job, it's called mechahen. Therefore, when a Levi is doing his job as a Torah teacher, or an officiant, or anything, or carrying the Torah, whatever they're doing in the people, I can refer to a Levi as a Kohen when he's doing his job as an educator. And I think that's the reason why all through Devarim, they're called Kohanim HaLevim. Because they're Levim, But they're called Kohanim when they're doing their job as a teacher and educator. And therefore, the words are interchanged all through the book. So that's one more example. And now, because I'm running out of time, I want to get to the better examples that we're going to find later in the Torah as far as their responsibility. So we saw Moshe's blessing. One key theme in Sefer Devarim, which I hope you remember, I think we talked about it before, is that when the law section begins in chapter 12, the first major topic that we have is called HaMakom HaShri Yivchar Hashem. Will there be one central place of worship of God, but in that one central place of worship will also be the Supreme Court. And we're going to make sure that every Jew on a regular basis goes to that one central place to keep unity in the religion and keep the Torah going in the right direction. Every Jew has to frequent this HaMakom HaShri Yivchar Hashem, Shalosh Regalim, three times a year, you have to go make Aliyah to this one place. And to make sure people come, in chapter 14 in Sefer Dvarim, we're going to have the earliest concept of, I think they call it nowadays, a Groupon. We're going to have a taxation. Can we read this on the Shalosh Regalim? Usually on Shmini Atzer, read this. It's called Aser Taser. So open up Sefer Dvarim to chapter 14. My mistake, new share. Chapter 14, I'm sorry. Sefer Dvarim, chapter 14. In chapter 14 in Sefer Dvarim, verse 22 is fine. Aser taser kotvot zarecha. Take 10% of your produce. Chazal say, maser rishon is 10% that goes to the Levites. And the second 10%, maser sheni, it's a Jewish tax where you separate 10%, but you get to keep it. But what do you do with it? An extra 10% of all your produce, you set it aside. You get to keep it, but you can only eat it in Yerushalayim. It's like a Groupon or a coupon for a certain restaurant. So why did they give you a $100 coupon for a restaurant? To make sure you use it and spend it there. It'll bring you to come to the restaurant. Therefore, to make sure that all the Jews come and have a good time in the Beit HaMikdash and come to visit Yerushalayim, 10% of your produce can only be eaten in Yerushalayim. I don't want it to go to waste. That's going to encourage people to go to Yerushalayim. V'yechalta lifnei Hashem elokecha, this 10% eat in front of God, b'makom asher yivchar shekin shmo sham, the place for God's name and reputation to be known. This 10% of all your produce and of your firstborn animals. Why? Listen carefully at the end of verse 23. Leman temad lirat Hashem elokecha kol hayamim. By visiting Yerushalayim on a regular basis, then you'll learn to fear God all the days of your life. In other words, to make sure, we call this idea of Yarchei Kala in Jewish, like going back to visit yeshiva or going to Israel for Yom Tovim and things like that. If you're going to come on a regular basis and visit the source of where your Torah is coming from, then hopefully that routine visit is Aliyah L'Regel every year at a certain time of the year with your produce. By coming and eating in Yerushalayim, this will teach you to fear God all the days of your life. And if it's too far, you can take you can redeem those fruits for money value and then use that money to bring it to Yerushalayim. Look at the last line. V'alevi asher bisharecha lo tazveno, keno chelek v'nachalai imach. When you go to Yerushalayim, remember, don't forget the Levite in your gates. What do you mean, don't forget the Levite? Maser sheni can only be in Yerushalayim. I take my maser and eat it in Yerushalayim. What does it mean that I take the Levite in my, not to forget the Levite? It means bring the Levite with you. That's if you're eating maser sheni in Yerushalayim, when you come, don't come by yourself. Bring your local rabbi with you to Yerushalayim with you. So when you come to Yerushalayim, he'll make sure that when you're in Yerushalayim, you'll be learning Torah and you'll be inspired the right way. So therefore, maser sheni is not just you eating in Yerushalayim, taking the Levite with you and making it a religious experience on a regular basis. We had one other example in chapter 18, after the law, chapter 17, after the law of a king. At the end of chapter 17, we have the law of a king. I'm sorry, the beginning of chapter 18. Chapter 17 is the law of the king. Chapters 16, 17, 18 are laws of national leadership. We have Shoftim appointing judges and all the gates, and then we have the law of the king, and then we have Kohanim and Levim. Then we're told the Kohanim and Levim, all Shevet Levi, can have a chelek or nachala with the Jewish people. Instead, they get from the nachala either from the korbanot or from the 10% maser. Why? Because Hashem is nachala. He's in charge of representing God. Therefore, when you give a gift to God, God gives that to the kohanim and levim. Then we're told what the kohanim get from the people. Why? Pasuk Hey. Kivo b'char Hashem Elohecha mikol shvatecha. Why did God choose Shevet Levi? Lamot l'sharet b'shem Hashem hu v'navu kol hayamim. It's his job to come and stand and serve God all the days. In other words, how does the Levi, how do the Kohanim and Levim serve God? By teaching the Torah. And therefore, should a Levi come, you know, a local Levi, who's from all of Israel, wherever he's living, he can come whenever he wants to the Beit HaMikdash in Yerushalayim to serve. And b'sherit b'shem Hashem Elokav k'chachav ha-levim. The Levim are always invited to come and recharge also in Yerushalayim. Yerushalayim will be the center place of all Torah study and leadership. And when the Levi comes to Yerushalayim, either with his local balabatim, the local people who is giving him maser or bringing the maser to Yerushalayim with him, he comes on a regular basis to Yerushalayim as well, and he gets an equal portion with everybody else. Now, one last thing about Birkat Kohanim. Let me take a quick look at the chat and see if I have any questions coming in here. I don't see the chat. One second. Where's my chat? Chat. Let's see the chat. Chat. Alt H says Alt H. So let's see the chat. I'll try to figure out the chat in a minute. Wait a second. Chat. Share chat. One second. Yeah, I have it here. No, I'm not sure. Oh, here we go. Chat. No, maser. Okay. Okay, we'll see. Okay, we'll talk about the coin. Okay, we'll see these all in a minute. Very good, Malachi. We're going to see, themes outside of Tanakh. But quickly, if I go to chapter 28 in Sefer Dvarim, this idea of blessing the Jewish people, what really brings blessing according to Chumash? According to Chumash, at the end of Sefer Dvarim, we have the Tochacha. If you follow God's laws, what will happen? Then all these blessings will come upon you. Baruch ata be'er, baruch ata basadeh. All through Chumash, if you want a blessing from God, okay, it's only if you keep the mitzvot. God will get planned the blessing upon you in everything you're doing. Okay, and then, listen, we have four psukim, just blessing, blessing, blessing. Pasuk tet, yikim Hashem lo la'am kadosh kasher nishba lach, ki tishmor mitzvot Hashem elokech v'lach tabin rachav. That goes back to our Sinai. God's going to establish you as his Am Kadosh, Mamlechet Kohanim Kadosh, like he swore to you at Har Sinai. When you keep all of God's laws, and then all the nations will see, Baruch HaMetz Kishem Hashem Nikrai Lecha, that God's name is associated with you through your behavior, and they'll respect you and fear you. And then God will give you blessing in everything you're doing. And then God will open up the wealth from heaven to give you the right rain at the time, and to bless everything you're doing. And you'll be in a leadership position. And if you don't, boy, you'll be in trouble, then you'll be cursed. In other words, the main, what brings blessing to the Jewish people, not some magical incantation by the Kohanim saying Birkat Kohanim. Birkat Kohanim is to remind the people that true blessing from God comes by keeping his mitzvot. Why did the Kohanim, figuratively speaking, bless the people? They bless the people to remember that the source of blessing is by keeping God's laws, because the Kohanim's job is to teach the Torah. The way you receive blessing from God is by keeping the Torah. V'simu et shmi b'nei Yisrael, to put my name on the Jewish people, v'ani avarchem. By teaching Torah to the Jewish people, Shevet Levi associates God's people with God's name and reputation. And if we do a good job keeping the Torah, God will bless us so that we can help him more. And the people in charge of teaching us the Torah are the living. So the way that Shevet Levi blesses in God's name is by teaching us Torah. And that goes back to what we talked about before. Now, quickly, I want to show you. Let me go back to my, we want to go back to the screen share. Make sure we covered everything on our outline, which we'll send to you later on. It's about their compensation and their function as national leaders. And we talked about that, chapter 31 and 27. We did chapter 27. We'll do that real fast. Yeah, chapter 27, my mistake. 27, no, we read 27, 9. We did that. That's appointing Yeshua, and that's Hakel. No, that's Hakel was chapter 9. I'm sorry, 27, we'll go back there. 27, 9. Let me do a new share. New share.
in Devarim, chapter 27. Only one we forgot so far. Should be the same thing. Oh, that's with Har Grisim and Har Ival. Okay. God tells Moshe, okay, in verse 9. Vadeber Moshe v'konim v'vim v'kol Yisrael le'mor. This is after the mitzvah to pick up the big stones and write the Torah and Har Grisim and Har Ival. Okay. Today you become a nation. And then make sure v'shamata v'kol Hashem Elokecha. Make sure to follow God. Then Moshe commands the people saying, Eli amdu al avrechet ha'am ha'har grizim v'avrechem et yardein. We have the different tribes setting on either side of Har Ival and Har Grizim for the brachan kala. And what happens? Banu halavim bamru kol Israel kol ram aror and then baruch. That was the introduction that we saw in chapter 28. Was the job of levim is not just to say the blessing, but to explain the source of the blessing. Because when the levim come and say, you know, these should be blessed, this is the blessing, this is the curse. The blessing is if you keep the mitzvot. Why are the Levim doing it? Because Levim are in charge of teaching the Torah. That was the topic right beforehand. On Har Ival, we write the Torah on the Avanim and explain it. We have a whole national gathering on Har Ival, what's become the land of Israel. Now, I want to show you quickly from Divrei Yamim. I want to show this actually happening in Divrei Yamim. I'll just bring one or two examples. In chapter 17 and 29. We'll take a quick look. We'll go to Divrei Yamim. The second, if you have a Tanakh with you, you can take a look. In second book of Divrei Yamim, Chronicles 2, we say chapter 17. It's a story of King Yehoshaphat. What happens? In third year of Yehoshaphat's reign, he sent the people to teach Torah, the Lamed Bar Yehuda, v'mem halavim, Shmaya get a whole list of levim who went around teaching Torah, v'lamdu b'Yehuda, v'mem sefer Torah Hashem, v'yisivu chari Yehuda, v'lamdu ba'am. Here we see an example, the Shevet Levi is sent out by Yishev by Yehoshaphat to teach Torah, told the people. Yehoshaphat was a very good time period. Something very similar happens in the time of Chizkiyahu, he does almost the same thing, and we don't have time, but also in time of Yeshayahu also, you'll look later on the source sheet. What I want to end with, something that hopefully you won't be angry with me for, I'm going to give sort of a source which sort of supports the Shiva world and what I guess you would call a Haredi approach to Judaism. What happened here to my share? This is not good. I'm missing. Here we go. Shiva Levi. Here we go. The Rambam in Hilchot Shmitan Yovot, but in the end of the book of Zraim. Remember the Rambam has 14 books? In the end of the book of Zraim, in the last set of laws is Shmita and Yovel. In the end of the laws of Shmita, he says as follows. Everyone have it? You have the English you can follow with. I'll make this a little bit bigger. And ooh, a bit too big. A little smaller, okay. V'lama lo zacha Levi benachat Eretz Yisrael. Why doesn't Shevet Levi get any land in Israel and get also beauty of war? That's a summary of the whole shir. Why does Shevet Levi not get Nachala? Not because they carry the Mishkan or they have to guard it. Because it's their job to teach Torah. It's an eternal job forever. Therefore, they don't have to go to war. They're not involved in regular day life. They're not involved in business. They're not involved in war. They're dedicated their whole life to learning and teaching Torah. Okay. They're God's army. Also in the bracha to Moshe Rabbeinu. Now comes the big switch from Shevet Levi to any Torah student in yeshiva today, if he's doing a good job. This doesn't only apply to Rambam's, I think, talking a lot about learning Torah, and this is thousands of years later, in the 12th century. Not only Shevet Levi, anyone. In fact, he says, not only Jews, anyone who has this spirit in him, this feeling in him, who dedicates his life to separate himself, to stand in front of God, to serve him,
by learning to know God. This clearly is not talking about temple service. It's not talking about bringing karbonot or singing songs in the temple. This is dedicating one's life to teaching Torah, to serving God, standing in front of God to serve Him, to know God. Okay? Halach yashar kmo shasa Elohim, uporak me'at sabra et cheshbonot ha-ravim asher bikshu b'nei adam, doesn't get involved with, you know, worldly matters and businesses and things like that, but dedicates his life to Torah study. Harezenik kadesh kodesh kodeshim, he's separated in the service of God. V'yashem chakov v'nachlotot l'olam v'lomei olamim. And God will provide for him a parnasa, who have what to live on, just like God provided with the Kohanim and Levim. Hari David, Olav Hashem Omer, Hashem Menati, Menat Chalki, Bekosi, Atav, Tomaych, Tomaych Gorali. You're the one supporting me. What Rambam is saying, anyone who wants to take this mantle of leadership, of Torah study, and teaching Torah, God will provide for him for his well-being. So you sort of see from here the whole concept, which is a very classic Jewish concept, that not the entire nation, but 5%, 10% of the Jewish people can dedicate their lives to Torah study, to teaching Torah, to being experts in Torah, to keeping the flame of Torah going, because that's how we become God's people. Again, teaching the Torah, we apply the Torah in our day-to-day lives, but someone has to be at the heart of the Jewish people, teaching Torah, making sure it's interpreted properly, passed down properly, and applied properly. And then the rest of the tribes can actually fulfill the laws better by having this tribe. Therefore, God separates one of our tribes to dedicate themselves to Torah study and Torah teaching and making sure that Torah is going to be the center of God's people in the same manner that God separated the Jewish people from all the other nations to be his model nation. So just like we have the Jewish people among the nations, we have Shevet Levi among the Jewish people, and then later we have the Kohanim within Shevet Levi. So in light of the theme of Devarim, which is a book about becoming a nation in the service of God, taking the concept of Har Sinai to be a nation, the Mamlechet Kohanim V'Kadosh, who's going to serve God forever, not just as individuals, but as a nation, as a people. And all through Sefer Devarim, we saw laws that relate to institutions of national leadership, about how we go to war in our economic system, and our national center, and our Supreme Court. We talked about over and over again, the laws about how a nation represents God. Therefore, the core institution of national leadership that's going to make sure that we're God's people forever will be Shevet Levi. Therefore, Shevet Levi and Sefer Devarim is about a leadership group that teaches Torah, that carries the burden of Torah, blesses the people by teaching them Torah in God's name, and keeps Judaism alive. That's the theme, the mega theme of Sefer Devarim, which preceded, remember those laws preceded the laws that come up later in Sefer Bamidbar. Later on, we give them another job. Also, they guard the Mikdash because, you know, people weren't behaving there properly. So maybe in light of certain events like Chet HaEgel, God gave them another job. But at the core, coming together with the Ten Commandments at Har Sinai and the laws that Moshe receives on the first 40 days of how to become a nation serving God, I need an entire tribe that's dedicated to teaching Torah and keeping Torah going, being judges and educators and teachers. And that hopefully will keep the Jewish people going. Within that system, we have their support that there's a 10%, I guess, education tax or civil service tax that the people pay to support that tribe. But without that, you wouldn't have the Jewish people going forever. Once the tribal system sort of disintegrated after the temple was destroyed and we went into exile, therefore, what's the Rambam say? Any individual who wants to take on that responsibility of teaching Torah can now take that responsibility to learn Torah, to teach Torah, and therefore, the rest of the people have, a responsibility to help support them. Again, we have to make sure you're supporting the right people. And as long as those people doing it aren't doing it to become parasites, but rather to actually being totally dedicated and doing a good job with that Torah, I don't think anyone would mind. If the people dedicating their lives to Torah study would act accordingly, in my opinion, there wouldn't be any opposition to that idea. When it becomes a loophole for not taking other responsibilities, then that's something else. That I don't want to get into the politics, modern-day Israeli politics about supporting yeshiva, government supporting yeshiva study, but the very core concept is something very basic to Judaism. So that's our topic for today. I went a little overtime again. Next week, we're going to talk about leadership of national leadership in Moshe and the Rock, and why doesn't Moshe go into Israel based on what he says in his speech in Devarim, as opposed to what he says in Bochum Yisrael, and with that, we'll conclude our study of Sefer Devarim in light of Sefer Bamidbar. Okay, let me just take a quick look if there's any other questions. The Rambam, okay. Rambam modernly, okay, that's right. The Rambam is applying, one second, contradictions the Rambam is pushing to Kola elsewhere. I don't want to bring up the political issue of Kola, but the concept of a Kola makes perfect sense according to the Rambam. And that's according to the Rambam, it makes sense according to Sefer Devarim. I need Sefer Levi. Now, Chumash wants to make sure that someone has to be doing it. It goes back to a bigger question, whether is education happening as the firstborn of every family? Now, does every family have to dedicate a person to serving God? Or do we do it at the national level? You can compare it to, do you homeschool or send, does every family educate their own family? Or do we, at a community level, do we set up schools and the community educates its students? So maybe thematically, it's more important that happen at a family level, but practically speaking, we do it at the community level. So in the nation, we have a tribe dedicated to Jewish education. But so that way I make sure that there's always people who are supported. When that tribal system disintegrates, the rabbis create a new system that sort of replaces its function. But the core function, I think, is very clear in Sefer Dvarim. And therefore, if we're going to find a contradiction between what seems to be the job of the Kohanim and Levim in Sefer Dvarim to Bamidbar, it's because the themes are different. Bamidbar talks about service in the Mikdash and bringing korbanot, but not about, it's not talking about teaching Torah and national leadership. That's the theme of Sefer Devarim, which again, those laws come earlier. The laws in Bamidbar are after from Chet Ha'egel, and afterwards, they come later. Okay, so we'll stop here, and again, I'll share this source sheet on the website, so you can have that to review everything. Everyone should have a good week, and I
stay
safe and healthy.
All too.
Okay, thank you.
So, Rabbi, what exactly changed then after Chet Ha'egel, according to this?
I think the main job of it could be Be'et Ahi and Sefer Devarim is not referring. I know the person says after Chet Ha'egel because they helped him. I think Be'et Ahi could also be referring to Mamad Har Sinai, which is also refers to Be'et Ahi throughout Sefer Bamidbar. But even if it's Chet Ha'egel, I think just the job of guarding, of the extra guarding, though it's giving Shebivi the job of helping the Kohanim guard the Mikdash. Could be added, but I want to just look at it logically. If I have hundreds of thousands of people and I need people like to serve God in the Mikdash, it doesn't make sense that Aaron and his two sons are gonna serve an entire nation. It's too much work for three people. It makes more sense if God's gonna, it doesn't make sense that I need all of Shevet Levi just to carry the Mishkan from place to place. And remember, in Sefer Devarim, we don't even talk about the Mishkan traveling. We're supposed to go to Israel and build a Makam HaShiv Har Hashem. In the laws in Devarim, carrying the Aron is not a job for the desert. It's a job for all generations in the land of Israel once we're settled down. And therefore, when you understand the laws in Devarim come first, then it makes sense that their original job is to teach Torah and be officiants and judges. And then Once we need a Mishkan and we need a portable Mishkan and we need to guard the people from coming too close, etc. So I'm going to give them an extra job of guarding the Mishkan. I think the job of guarding the Mishmeret of the Olam Moed might be because they were able. It has to do with the story of Chet Ha'egel and what the sin of Chet Ha'egel was. But there's a whole other theme that we're sort of keeping people in Chumash. We're keeping people out of the Mikdash. We're keeping out of the Mikdash. We don't want people coming, getting too close to God.
Originally the plan was for the Bechorim just to be bouncers? That was really all the Bechorim were basically bouncers?
No. I think God's original plan was to switch the Bechor to the Levim from the beginning. I don't think that was a switch. I'll tell you why. Thematically, the Bechor being dedicated to God only makes sense the first generation coming out of Egypt. Which firstborn were saved coming out of Egypt? Only the Bechorim who were alive at that time. So the concept of a nation, of the concept of people being sort of owing their lives to God, because it was safe for Makat Bechorot, only applies to the first generation of the firstborn going out of Egypt. But if I look at the Jewish people as Bnei Bechor Yisrael, then the Jewish people have a responsibility to God. Just like the firstborn were saved in Makat Bechorot. Therefore, God saved lives, therefore they're responsible to God. That only applies to the first generation coming out. But for all generations, that responsibility goes on the Jewish people because B'nai B'chor Yisrael, we as a people were saved by God. Therefore, we have the national responsibility to serve God forever. Therefore, at our national level, we dedicate one tribe to serve God. Now, therefore, that's why we have all these ceremonies of taking the B'chor, the Dusha of the B'chor, and moving it to the Levi. It comes up in chapter 1 and 3 of Bamidbar, chapter 8 in Bamidbar, and Parshat Balotcha, you have it. You have it sort of referred to also in chapter 18. That's why they have no nachala. They get a compensation, but it's not that they're chosen and they get more privileges. They're chosen because of the responsibility. Because of the responsibility, they get compensation, but the consequence is they don't get no land. So it's not that, just like they have a different job to do. That's why their main job is a responsibility and not their privilege. And Am Yisrael goes the same way. Our main job is what we need to do, not what we receive. So God will bless us. God didn't choose us to receive blessing. God chose us to keep his laws. God says, I'll bless you and help you stay alive and be prosperous if you do a good job serving me. But I'll bless you so that you can work for me, so you can get your job done better. But you're not keeping the mitzvot to get blessed. God's blessing you. You're keeping the mitzvot because that's your job. And God promises, do a good job, and I'll help you get your job done.
Okay, Menachem. So then, then what do you do with what do you do with the Kadesh Li Kol Peterachem? If it was only for that first Yotzei Mitzrayim,
so then I have a symbolic act of remembering. Every Jew has to remember what it means to be a Bechor. That every ritual act we have is a symbolic act that reminds us of why we're chosen. The same thing when you daven, when you bring a korban. You're doing something symbolic. I'll give you an example from next week from Parshat Chukat. Someone passes away, correct? I can't do nothing, agreed? You have to do something. Mm-hmm. So I have paradu, I have like sprinkling this, you know, water mixture of ether and things like that. There's certain things you have to do to remember what you're about as a person. Certain life cycle events need commemoration. You have to do something. Someone has a birthday, you can't do nothing, do something, whatever, it's anniversary. You can't do nothing, do something. Whatever you're doing is something symbolic that reflects something deeper. Mm-hmm. So the whole world of ritual is about symbolic acts to remind us of what we're about as a nation. So it makes sense to symbolically every firstborn animal, oh, it's a big deal. It is a big deal.
And every firstborn human, the same thing?
And anything firstborn, that within any nation, but any firstborn, if you have a flock, so the firstborn, you know, baby, that means the, you know, of an animal, if you're a farmer. Your fruit, first 3 years, leave it alone, and then you plant tree, then you have net to revive. Also, the first from your produce, when you take challah, the beginning of your dough, you take the first of everything and you give it to God, because you need constantly to remember what it means to be chosen, which is what tefillah is about, basically. Tefillah is about remembering, not that God answered, remembering why you're chosen and what it means to be Jewish. So I need to do a ritual act every single day, all the time. But the ritual is there to remind me what I'm about. The ritual is not the goal. The ritual is a vehicle to remember the core of being Jewish, which is your behavior.
Very good. Thank you.
Sure.
So Rav Liebtag?
Yeah?
If you don't mind, just another quick one. So according to this idea, the initial breakdown, the initial idea, what exactly would have been the original responsibilities of the Bechorim versus the Leviim according to the original plan?
The Bechorim were just to set the ball rolling of the need to realize that look what God did. Remember at Har Sinai, what's God say? Look what I did to Egypt. I brought you on the wings of eagles, and now do you want to follow me? The idea that because God saved you, remember, what do we tell our children at Korban Pesach? Take a look in chapter 13 in Shemot. They open up Shemot. Where's Shemot 13? Shemot, share screen. Shemot chapter 13, verse 14. Shemot, where is Shemot? I lost Shemot from before. Shemot chapter 13, I said? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
13. When your kids ask you, why do you bring Korban? Pasuk Yedalad. Mm-hmm. Let's say your kids ask you, what's the meaning of Dusha Bechor? Remember, this is... This is that. So your kids ask you, what's the meaning of this ritual of every firstborn animal? What do you tell your sin? The Mate love. God took us out of Egypt with an outstretched, with a out of Egypt, Mibet Avadim. I need to remember why God took me out of Egypt and that he saved me from Egypt. And then like all the mitzvot, I need a sign and a reminder, not only that he took me out of Egypt, but why he took me out of Egypt. Remember in Tzitzit, the Mantis Guru, okay? You need to remember that God took you out of Egypt. So you can serve him. He'll be your God. You'll be his people. So if I'm going to do some ritual, I need that ritual has to remind me. And the idea that God saved us by taking us out of Egypt, this idea that God goes back to Brit Ben Abtarim, remember that God's involved in your history and watching over your history, not because you have these magic powers, but you have a job to do. So the knowledge that God watches over you and that you have responsibility to be his people and he can watch your history and oversee it. But you need to know that he'll take care of you if you're doing a good job. And boy, he's going to punish you harshly if you're doing a bad job. That knowledge should motivate you to you better be good. But he's not promising I'll only do good to you. He's promising also I'll punish you like crazy if you don't do a good job. So I need to remember God's involvement in our history, which is the biggest theme of Yitzhak Mitzrayim. It goes back to Brit Ben Abtarim, of God's involvement in world history and how we're part of world history. That God watches over us and has a job for us to do. So that can help us or can hurt us, but he's always overlooking our history. Not just to save us, also to punish us when we're doing a lousy job. So again, my point is that God takes this symbolic act of the firstborn, but the whole logic of a firstborn, Kidi B'chor, is only the actual people who were saved in Makat B'chorot. As soon as within a year, I'm transferring that whole responsibility eternally to the tribe of Shevet Levi, which is much more practical. And that's the idea. I have a guild, I have a Shevet that's in charge of doing something. But I hope the key point I'm trying to get across is, it's just like God needs one nation for the sake of the 70 nations. God needs one tribe for the sake of the 12 tribes to be the liaison, the funnel between God and his people. And that's the idea of Kedusha and the idea of Bechora. And the idea it's responsibility. Not privilege, but the privilege is a function of your responsibility, but not the goal. The goal is responsibility. The goal isn't the privilege. I call that the difference between racism and Judaism in a nutshell. Okay, so I better stop here. Yeah, I'm going to...